Welcome in to the DFS podcast. I'm Mike Alexander. Joining me tonight, we got Josh Fernandez. How we doing, Fern?
Good, Mike. I'm good. Just excited to be starting off the MLB season. As far as Lineup Logic podcasts go, it's been a long time coming. I know Sean has been like really focused on NBA as it's been closing out, and he's taken a well-deserved little brief break, but you and I got this thing going here for the Friday night pod. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is what the pod's all about, shaking the cobwebs off, transitioning from NBA to MLB. How you played very much MLB so far?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Haven't missed a slate yet. And you know, kind of figuring out things as far as you know, the trends are going, but it's been pretty good so far. How about you?
Yeah, I've been playing. Yeah, my thing is I always play weekdays, and I take the weekends off generally just to kind of recharge the batteries because it can be such a grind. Mm-hmm. Unless there's like a particularly juicy slate or a matchup I want to try to get after.
Yeah.
Had a good night last night. I thought I was being more contrarian.
I caught that on the Slack, the Slack chat.
Yeah, you know, went with the Yankee stack because Price had been so good through two starts, and I figured people were going to be using him when there weren't very many pitchers available. But more people went Yankees than I expected, but still very good. Very good night.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I had to play pretty light last night. We had a little event at my son's school, so I could only play a single bullet, and when all else fails and I don't have any time to do any lead up to lock research, I tend to go with my Orioles, and
there you go.
You know, it wasn't as good as I hoped it would be, but hey, I'm only out $5, so it's all good.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's something to be said for playing your home team. One of my biggest wins in baseball was playing the Phillies in, I think this was about 3 years ago, and you know, in their dark days when nobody wanted to touch the Phillies, and they just went off for like 12 runs in a random game. You know, I took down a pretty good sized GPP. It was only probably like a $3 or $4 GPP, but it was still a nice little payout.
Hey. It's awesome, man, and it doesn't hurt that it's your that's your fills, so right. It makes it even sweeter.
Yeah, especially if you're going to a game, you got to play a stack if you're going to be at the game. So,
oh my God, forget about it. Whenever I go to an Orioles game, I got to stack them up, man. That just makes it so much better.
Yep. All right, so a little outline for what we're going to do tonight. We're going to do a deep dive on DraftKings and a little bit of what it's about playing on there. We're going to talk some terms, payout structure, and qualifiers when you hear us throwing those around. We're going to talk about why warm weather is good, talk about finding free squares, and then the two key stats we're going to jump in on tonight are hard hit rate and ground ball fly ball percentage. So at the top, DraftKings, Fern, you know, kind of my preferred site. As I've gotten more involved with Lineup Logic, a lot of the people are on FanDuel there. So I've gotten more into FanDuel, but I really enjoy playing two pitchers, which is the main calling card of DraftKings MLB. Yeah, I think it's obviously more strategy. If there's only one ace out there, you know, you can't just roster him and call it a day. You got to keep digging. You can either pay up for, you know, two good pitchers. You can pay down for two kind of wild card pitchers and go heavy with bats. It, you know, it opens up a lot of avenues that I really enjoy playing. What do you think about DraftKings MLB?
Yeah. As a lot of the listeners might know, am a big time FanDuel guy, but last season I went for about 5 or 6 weeks, pretty hard on DraftKings. You know, I don't know what prompted me to do it, but I really got into it. And this season, I'm kind of back to FanDuel, but I anticipate a little swing to DraftKings. I don't have enough time to research for both slates. Mm-hmm. I wish I did, but maybe I'll swing over to DraftKings. But yeah, I like DraftKings. Like you said, the two pitchers. I mean, that's a game changer. You know, it's just the best. I'd love researching hitters, but you know, in MLB DFS, I mean, especially in cash games, you know, it really starts with your pitcher. And when you can roster two of them and you really have a good handle on the nature of the slate, you can have a huge advantage on DraftKings if you know where to pivot for your, you know, your SP2 slot. Like you said, you can't hammer the chalk stud. You know, for example, tonight, like everybody and their mom used Jose Berrios. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really take a genius to figure that one out. But who do you use for your SP2? Gio Gonzalez? I mean, sure, it's going to be expensive. Mm-hmm. You'll have two solid pitchers. But who do you use for your two slot? You know, and that's what separates the winning lineups from the losers is not that you pick Berrios. It's who'd you pick for your second slot? So I love that aspect about DraftKings.
Right. And that's usually what decides it for me is if I have two pitchers I'm comfortable with, then I'm over on DraftKings. If I don't, I'm probably on FanDuel. And the one thing that I'm a little sour about with DraftKings right now is that the last couple nights, they've left off the late game of the slate to try and get their single game slate going. It's just a bad move. It's a short slate already. You know, tonight I just couldn't find two pitchers I was happy with. You know, I think you needed to have either Stratton from the Giants or the Padres guy. You know, so I just stayed on FanDuel, did a little Yahoo. I've been playing over there because I don't know if you've heard this yet, but they're doing this thing called Quick Match where you can only play one. There's five like values. There's a dollar game, there's a $2 game, a $5, a $10, and a $25. And it's a head to head with no rake. So that's kind of got my attention. I've been trying to play there semi-regularly, which is cool. But
that's interesting. Well, I guess Yahoo could afford that. They're a publicly traded company,
right.
So maybe they afford a right. little.
They're finally trying to get like their DFS, you know, platform to gain some traction. Like they really missed the boat. They were, you know, such a leader in fantasy sports, and then just got lapped when it came to DFS. But getting back to DraftKings, so the other differences are, you know, power is toned down a little bit. Home runs, triples, doubles aren't quite what they are in FanDuel. And then the pitching stats themselves are a little bit more intrinsic. You've got, you know, the standard stuff, innings pitched, strikeouts, the win, no quality start like you have on FanDuel. But then earned runs are negative, hits, walks, hit batsmen are all negatives. And you get some bonuses if you get complete games, shutouts, no hitters, which don't happen often these days. And then there's no utility spot.
Yeah, there's way more to consider when you are researching on DraftKings, you know, as far as scoring goes, just a whole lot of moving parts, a lot of variables. You know, with FanDuel, I mean, you can select a pitcher and he can throw a pretty bad game and you can still have an awesome score. And when I say bad game, you know, obviously we don't want a lot of earned runs, but a pitcher, you know, could give up 8-9 hits and just get lucky mm-hmm. and leave men on base and, you know, get out of jams. And you look at his FanDuel score and you would never know it. But with DraftKings, you know, you get penalized by allowing base runners. And for people who really like to dig deep into pitching research, that's a huge edge because you can't really just look at a pitcher and say, how many Ks is he going to get? And is his team, you know, implied to win so he can get the W and hopefully the quality start? DraftKings, you got to consider a whole lot more. And it's a lot harder. It's a lot more challenging.
Right. Yeah, that's the, you know, my process. I enjoy finding pitching a little more than hitting. I tend to hit on pitching more often than I do, you know, with hitters. And that's just the nature of baseball. Yeah, 300 batting average is good for a hitter. You know, if 1 in 3 starts is good for a pitcher, like he's probably not going to make it very long.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, you know, for people starting out, FanDuel is definitely the recommended place. You can just kind of focus on the odds. Is there a good offense behind them? You know, you don't have to go quite as deep. But if you enjoy that kind of thing, you know, DraftKings is somewhere to think about.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's hit a couple terms here. the first one I mentioned, payout structure. You'll hear that thrown around, and what that's entailing is when, you know, there's a prize pool, the top 20% or so of people are going to win in a GPP. In the largest GPPs, you know, on like a Friday slate, the real big $3-4 GPP is going to be a very top heavy payout structure. So, first place is going to take home 100K, something like that. Then second place, okay. And then as you go down, like even though the same amount of spots are being paid out, they're not being paid out at the same ratio. So I know that's something that a lot of people have been pushing DraftKings and FanDuel for. They, you know, it's obviously when there's like a Millie Maker, that's a really sexy kind of tournament. You know, oh, I got a shot at $1 million. But finishing, you know, in the like number 100 in the Millie Maker, like you only get like $100. It's not as profitable as it should be for beating thousands and thousands of people. So that's something to pay attention to. And you know, when we talk contest selection, try to hit on that occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I just want to like interject for a second. And, you know, with payout structure, I think that, I mean, along with a few other aspects of the game of DFS, you know, are very overlooked. You know, people spend so much time trying to figure out who the picks of the day are, you know, whatever sport it is, you know, who to stack, who to, you know, jam into their lineups. And a lot of DFS players neglect to really consider their contest selection. And that over a large sample size of slates really separates profitable players from non-profitable players. You know, you really have to figure out like A, what your goal is for DFS. Do you want to make a profit? Do you want to have like, you know, residual income from DFS? Do you want to make this like a primary income? I mean, good luck with that, but you can definitely make a residual income. You know, if your goal is to make, you know, $1,000 a year, a couple $1,000 a year, you know, you can do that. You just have to plan accordingly. And when I say that, I mean, you have to choose the right contests. And if your goal and with your limited bankroll, you know, because I'm assuming the vast majority of people listening to this have limited bankrolls, you know, in the area of like hundreds of dollars, maybe $1,000. Like not many of us have six figures to throw around and max out GPPs yep. every night. You know, you have to be really smart about the contests you select. And so Mike, when you mentioned, you know, really top heavy tournaments, I mean, if you're going to enter those, you have to be completely comfortable with losing every last cent that you enter, because odds are you at best are going to just like double up your money in the lowest payout tier.
Right. Like even doing well in that tournament is not very profitable. You have to take it down. And if, you know, if you want to buy the lottery ticket, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, like my favorite thing with baseball is to max out pretty much every night, the 25 cent tournament on FanDuel. And it's only $37.50. Right. That fits into my bankroll. And that's just fine for me. But like, just to illustrate your point, you know, I was, you know, lucky enough to have a few lineups in the 220s and 230s last night, and I barely cracked the top 100. Right. You know, that was out of
and the difference, for example, is, you know, my Yankee stack put up a 230 last night, and I had that in the small bunt and a 100 man, and I was third in the 100 man and seventh in the small bunt. That's like a 290 person field. So yeah, that was fairly profitable because I was in the top 10 in both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's like a perfect example because like, all right. So during NBA season, I on Twitter was like really adamant that people give 100 man tournaments and small GPPs like the small bunt, you know, I guess I can't remember. I think this is small SWAT, the 297 people tournaments. give them a chance, because over the course of a month, you are going to most likely be more profitable entering those over entering large field GPPs, because the likelihood that you take down a 100-man or a 297-person single entry are so much higher than taking down a 20,000-person tournament. Yes, like you said, you know, your eyes light up when you see $3,000 top prize for a $2 entry or something. But really, guys, like the odds of you hitting that are so slim. And I'm not discouraging you from entering those, but your bread and butter really needs to be, I don't even want to say like 50-50s or cash games. I mean, you don't have to play those, but just go for tournaments that have high upside, but are not thousands and thousands of people, because you are just way more likely to take home money with lineups that would probably, you know, be subpar in a massive field tournament.
Yeah, taking down 100 man feels really good. I would say almost as good as a really big field GPP. Like, that's obviously on its own level, but it still feels freaking awesome taking down 100 man tournament.
Hell yeah, man. $1 into $25, like 25x that $1. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, my approach with bankroll is it's the same as if you play season long baseball. It's don't harm the bankroll. The same as in season long baseball, don't harm your ERA. Don't stream a 2-start pitcher, you know, who's going to give up 5 runs one night and 7 runs another night. Like, your ERA is never going to recover from that.
Right.
Same thing with your bankroll. Don't go crazy entering a bunch of big field GPPs that you can't recover from.
Right. Yeah. You want to live to see another day. Like, DFS is a marathon, and football season's going to be here, and then basketball, then baseball 2019 is going to be back again, and so on and so forth. Yep. It's not going anywhere, guys. You want to be around, and the last thing you want to be doing is redepositing every 3 or 4 weeks.
Yep. So speaking of, you know, protecting the bankroll, our other term of the night is qualifier. So tell us, you know, what we mean when we say qualifier, Josh.
Yeah, so qualifiers, you know, there's a variety of them on both FanDuel and DraftKings, and I'm assuming other sites too. But a qualifier is a tournament that typically you have to come in the top three, but oftentimes it's winner take all, and you get a ticket to enter a higher dollar tournament. So for example, you might have a qualifier out of a couple hundred people and it's like $2 ahead, you know, and the first place person gets a ticket to, you know, a $300 tournament or something. So they're pretty cool. You definitely want to be smart when you enter them. Don't, like, you know, expect to win them very often, if ever. But if you do, it's an awesome way to get into these massive payout tournaments that have small fields for just a few bucks.
Right. Yeah. They're the lottery ticket of lottery tickets.
Yeah, for sure. Because if we want to win $100,000, you know, guys like us, you know, I mean, we're not sitting here with $20 in our accounts, but we're also not sitting with $20,000 in our accounts. You know, if we want to get into a $100,000 top payout, we're going to be entering these like $3-4, you know, 50,000 person tournaments. But those big time ones, you can win $100,000 and only compete with, you know, a couple, you know, like 2,000 people, 1,000 people or something. Those cost a lot of money to enter, but you can get in there with a qualifier for just a few bucks.
Right. Yeah. Most of the time, you know, once in a blue moon, against my better judgment, I throw into a big qualifier, but the only qualifiers I ever really mess with are on FanDuel. They do have some decent smaller ones that, you know, are only a small step up. It's usually like a 25 to 30 person, field, and it's $1 to enter, and you're getting like a $4 ticket or a $10 ticket. And there's usually a few of them for the top. So it's, you don't have to beat that many people, but you're not really getting a big payout. So,
yeah, Yeah, and you know, considering that you're going to have to most likely take the whole thing down in order to get anything in return, you're going to have to be really contrarian. Well, not necessarily. I should rephrase that. You're going to have to be contrarian in a few spots.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe we can, like, this is a good way to talk about contrarianism just for a moment. But I just want to get on a soapbox for a second and say that I feel like some people, when they talk about being contrarian, think that you have to be contrarian across the board. You have to pivot everywhere. You don't have to pivot everywhere. You only have to pivot in like two spots, maybe one spot. You can go chalk in a massive contest of thousands of people and win the whole thing and have, you know, 80% of your lineup be chalk. It's those two guys that you pivot that are 5% owned that go ham that can win it for you. So you have to pivot in a qualifier if you want to take it down. There's no way to do it unless you pivot in a couple spots. And it's kind of an art to pivoting that takes time to learn. But I don't know if you have anything to say on that, expound on it a little bit.
No, totally agree. Like when the Yankees get hot, they're going to be super popular every night, especially when they're facing, you know, some of the worst pitchers of the, you know, of the AL East, particularly your Orioles.
Oh yeah. No, Andrew Cashner is not going to continue.
Doing. Yeah. I'm glad he's back to being the bad Cashner, because he was good for a while last year. And like, I just kept going after him and I kept being left wanting. But yeah, so like, don't avoid the Yankees entirely if they're facing Andrew Cashner on a warm day in New York. You know, get your Yankee stack in there. You know, maybe you use the back half of the lineup to get a little bit different, but then just have a second stack that's contrary, and that's where you make up the difference. And you know, going back to my lineup from last night, like the Yankees crushed it, but what really got me there was I had Javi Baez in there, and not a lot of people had Javi, so. Yeah, that's it. You set the table with a good stack. Don't worry about the ownership and let the rest of your lineup give you differentiation.
Yeah, I like what you said about getting the bottom of the lineup. That's definitely an art. It's really not hard.
Yeah, people always forget that in cores. Like they just go, you know, 2, 3, 4 in cores and forget about like, you know, the guys who are up, you know, Ramiel Tapia, if he gets called up, like he's going to be hitting 7th or 8th, but he can just as easily hit a home run.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's got power. He's a good contact hitter. And you know, he's the guy that can get on base out of the 8 hole and be on deck for, you know, Chuck Nasty. So and that's actually, that reminds me, is one of the best contrarian, in my opinion, one of the best contrarian plays is to stack something like 8-9-1-2 or, you know, 7-9-1-3 or something. Like, do the turning over the bottom of the lineup. It's kind of hard to do it in the National
League. Yep, the wraparound.
Exactly. It's kind of hard to do it like with National Leaguers, because, you know, you really got to pick your spots with those pitchers, right? But AL teams, you know, you got, I mean, like, one, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, Mike, but a lot of the time when the Yanks go off, I always notice that somebody gets like Torreyes in there. You know, like Torreyes is like a favorite guy.
Especially early last year.
Go ahead.
Yeah, especially early last year. He was like a critical part of some stacks. He was playing well in the early part, and he was there on base when the big boys came up.
So, you know, maybe one thing you guys listening can like bookmark, you know, when you get some time, is just kind of go through the league and just see who are some really good, reliable, you know, on base contact hitting guys that typically, you know, bat 8th or 9th. Because if they get on base, you know, then they're followed by the leadoff hitter, the, you know, middle of the lineup. And they're typically really cheap. So some of these high octane offenses, you know, like for example, Derek Fisher on the Astros, there's a handful of teams that he would probably be batting, you know, second for, but he's batting ninth for the Astros. And, you know, you're telling me that I can get a guy for 2,800 who, if he gets on base, will be followed by, you know, George Springer and Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, like, sign me up.
Right, right. And that segues pretty well into the next thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, I call it finding the free squares. So these are guys who are low salary and in a good spot. Generally, you know, you kind of need to get them in there if you're going to compete, because it's salary relief. It's going to let you unlock the bigger bats you need or the top pitchers. Most of the time, it's a guy who doesn't start every day. A really good example would be on the Dodgers, Kike Hernandez. When, you know, he's facing a left-handed pitcher, he's a total free square. He's hit cleanup some to start the year because they're missing Justin Turner. So anytime he's out there, because he only plays sporadically, he's a free square. You know, if guys are in a really plus park, you know, like Colorado or, well, can't say Chase Field too much anymore with the humidor, but, you know, Camden Yards in the summer, you know, Yankee Stadium in the summer, Citizens Bank, Great American Small Park in Cincinnati. When there's guys that are, it's like 6, 7, 8 or 7, 8, 9 in the AL, they're going to be your free square because they're a low price and in a good spot. So they're really important to get into your lineup, like I said, so that you can afford to build stacks that are going to be expensive, your Yankee stacks, your Astros stacks, that kind of thing. Anything to add on the free squares, Josh?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, free squares. Like, one thing that I really try to pay attention to for every single slate is once lineups are out, before I even start building anything and begin forming biases, I really want to, go with an open mind and look at which guys are batting in strange spots. Because I feel like those are leading indicators for big things to come. So for example, this is not new news at this point, but because he's been in the middle of the lineup now for about a week now, but Steve Pierce, like last week, Steve Pierce, on the Blue Jays began hitting at the top of the Blue Jays lineup. And when you see that happen, when you see the lineup release and you're like, why the hell is this guy batting second or fourth? You know, there's got to be something that somebody smarter than me, somebody that knows more than me, i.e. the manager, knows, like, maybe I got to get on that. And I don't want to say that that's necessarily a free square, but it's a really great, in my opinion, leading indicator for something big. So, for example, I mentioned Steve Pierce. Another guy that kind of stands out to me there is, like, he moves around a lot, is Asdrubal Cabrera. He'll go anywhere from leadoff to fifth. And when I see him bump up to the leadoff spot, typically against lefties, I really like to jump on. I like Asdrubal. Yep. When he bats in the leadoff spot, I'm just trying to think of like somebody else. But my point is Albert Almora on the Cubs,
right?
He's another guy. Like, when these guys suddenly find themselves in these prime spots in the lineup, you really got to pay attention, and if you're a single bullet kind of guy and you only run like one lineup or you only run like three lineups, I mean, it's hard to really jam them in, but if you run a bunch of lineups, like, you really got to find some spaces for these guys, you know, throw all the research out the window. Like, if a guy gets bumped up into a prime spot and he doesn't really, like, you know, pop on your radar before lineups are released, and all of a sudden he's batting second, you got to get, you know, with the program there. Like Wilmer Flores, speaking of Mets, with Cabrera, same deal against lefties.
Yeah, and you know, it's usually lefty killers. That's, you know, they're guys who they only face maybe once a week a lefty, so that's when they put up most of their stats.
Right.
The rest of the time they're a below average hitter, and they're priced accordingly. And you know, DraftKings FanDuel isn't going to bump them up because they're facing a lefty today. They don't have that. They can't account for that on a daily basis. So you get the salary.
Yeah. But as far as not necessarily like looking at the lineup spot itself, if you can get a guy, like let's say you have your two stacks that you love, like your three man stack with the, you know, the Yankees, and your four man stack with a bunch of guys going against some garbage pitcher, you got that one more spot to go. You know, if you can get a guy for minimum salary who's batting like in the top six in the lineup, like as far as I'm concerned, like that's a free square. You see tons of guys take down GPPs with a goose egg. You don't have to have every single player go ham on your lineup to take down some big money.
Yep.
You can afford to have a zero or a three or a six. Okay. But if you want to get these big time stacks in and get your stud pitcher in, you can jam in a minimum salary guy. And if they're batting in the top six of the lineup, National League or American League, like just do it, you know?
Yep. All right, so real quick, tell us, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about warm weather, and a big portion of that is humidity. Tell us why that is something you need to pay attention to and target.
Yeah, so, I mean, baseball is, you know, probably the only sport where, like, weather truly matters on a daily basis. You know, football, it matters. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to make sure that it's not, like, snowing or raining or something for certain positions, but you don't really care much about the humidity or the wind as much. I mean, you do in football, but baseball, like we care about wind direction and, you know, when is the wind going to be blowing and, you know, what is the alignment of this ballpark and what is the humidity, you know, what's the dew point? Humidity is big. A lot of people talk about temperature. You see a whole lot of discussion early on in the season on Twitter, you know, oh, I'm staying away from this team because the temps are in the 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. And that's all well and good. Temperature definitely matters, especially for pitchers. Pitchers have a huge advantage in low temperature games. I mean, if you can get a pitcher pitching in a 40, 35, 40, 45 degree game, like you really got to pay attention because he's in a huge advantage. Temperature is important, but humidity is really important. And for those of you that didn't pay attention during science class back in middle school, humidity is just the density of the air, the amount of moisture in the air. And increased humidity results in reduced air density and allows balls to travel further. It also reduces the effect of like curveballs, like off-speed pitches, breaking balls. Mm-hmm. So there is a positive correlation, I would say, between hitting statistics and high temps and high humidity. So you definitely want to pay attention to that. There's all kinds of websites you can go to look up weather stats that are, displayed in a way for fantasy baseball, for DFS. My favorite website to look at weather is, Swish Analytics. It's swishanalytics.com/MLB/weather. And I just really like the way that they display their information. And one really cool thing that they show is the wind factors. So they take the wind into account and they tell you what statistics are positively and negatively affected by the wind. So in a given ballpark, like let's say the Great American Ballpark, if the wind is blowing, you know, right to left, then that helps with doubles. So check that out. It's really cool. But yeah, you get don't like rack your brain over like every little like minor detail about the weather, you know.
Right.
But it's something to think about.
Yeah, if you need to like flip a coin on something, you know, weather is definitely a good thing to be a deciding factor. You pulled a nice stat off of there. I think when the Braves were at home on one of their last home stands, and Freddie Freeman went yard that day, that you had called it. So definitely cool. For me, you know, upper 80s, really 90 degrees is like the golden number for temperature. Anything above that and it's going to be a good day for hitters. And for humidity, it's like 70%. So if you know, if you're using one of these resources and you see those numbers, like just think automatically get people in that game.
I just think that, you know, any edge you can get in DFS baseball is huge. And like weather is something that it's really hard to get yourself up to research the weather. But if you've got the time, you know, carve out 30 minutes, 20 minutes of your morning or whatever, just to kind of look at the forecasts and just make some notes.
Right. Or ask one of us, because we've almost definitely checked it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's hit these key stats real quick. Just kind of a brief top-down look before we get into the games. The one I wanted to talk about was hard hit rate. So with all the stat casts we've got going on in MLB these days, they're keeping track of all kinds of data, the speed the ball's leaving the bat, the spin, the launch angle. Really cool stuff. I'm so glad MLB is kind of getting on board with statistics finally in that regard. Hard hit rate is one of the more important ones, in my opinion. Obviously, the harder you hit a ball, the further it's going to go. And what you need to look at is when guys, their hard hit rate is either spiking, you know, compared to their average for the year, or you know, they've just got a positive trend for a long term here, maybe 2 weeks. Like they're locked in at the plate. They're getting good contact on the ball. You know, if you're seeing the barrel alerts in the Slack chat, like that's what that is. That's hard hit rate. So, you know, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's a really good thing to do to hit the ball hard. So anything to add on that, Fern?
Yeah, man. Hard hit rate, it's big, you know. And one thing that really helps about looking at hard hit rate, and you can find that on FanGraphs, it's pretty easy. You just go to leaders and you look at advanced stats, or you can create your own filters and whatnot. But hard hit rate, it's important because it can show you which guys that are in slumps are just getting unlucky. If a guy's in a air quotes slump and he's hitting the ball, you know, at a rate that is, you know, poor, hard hit rate that it's poor, then he probably deserves to be in that slump. But if a guy is hitting at a hard hit rate, you know, in like the upper, you know, 50%, upper 25% of batters, but he's only, you know, hitting like 200, you know, for a given span of time, then maybe you can get in ahead of everybody else. And, you know, the baseball gods will finally have mercy on him. And some of those hard hit balls will leave the park or find the gap or whatever. So hard hitting.
Right. But basically Manny Machado's first half of 2017.
And you mentioned StatCast too, you know, exit velocity is similar. I mean, hard hit rate, exit velocity, whatever you prefer, you know, you can go to baseballsavant.com and find exit velocity data there. But I mean, some of these guys that are hitting the ball, you know, 90 plus miles per hour on average, you know, over a large sample size, that is going to result in good statistics. But if you're looking at a small window of games, you know, a week or two, and a guy's hitting over 90 miles per hour, you know, or a hard hit rate over 40%, you really got to like bookmark that guy, because if he can just frankly get lucky, because a lot of it is luck in baseball, you know, you're going to get him at a nice price, because his price should depress with his slump, and you know, you're going to get low ownership too.
Right. And, you know, we're starting to build some sample sizes, so you'll start to be able to rely on some of those numbers soon. But yeah, let's jump into to the games here. Fern, you ready to dive into the Friday slate?
Yeah, buddy, let's do it, man.
Got some good stuff here. All right, first game of the main slate. We got the Rockies taking on the Nationals. Over under 9. Kyle Freeland, left-hander, throwing for the Rockies. Tanner Roark pitching for the Nationals. You know, it used to be that Tanner Roark was really good at home, really bad on the road, but even that has kind of ended, where he's not quite as good at home anymore. You got any interest in either of these pitchers?
Not really. You know, I mean, I'm assuming,
I'm mainly on this for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that that Blackman is going to be out again. But even without Blackman, you know, the Rockies have enough firepower to get to Roark. And, you know, the weather here, I'm in Maryland, and the weather here in Maryland is warming up. It was up to 80 degrees today. And at Nats Park, man, like, if the weather is warm, the ball just, like, leaves the yard.
Yeah, you get that nice mid-Atlantic weather. So, yeah, hitters in both lineups are definitely in play. Just looking through the Nats lineup, obviously, if Trey Turner is leadoff, that's a great spot. Ryan Zimmerman, he hit a ball hard tonight. He's going to be pretty cheap, so, you know, maybe a contrarian play there. Howie Kendrick is just, he's not putting up huge numbers, but he's just super consistent, so he's an interesting cash game guy for me. Anybody in the Rockies lineup you like?
Yeah, I mean, like, going against a righty, you know, I mean, Carlos Gonzalez is interesting. Gerardo Parra is interesting. You know, I think that...
Yeah, definitely
Parra. Yeah, definitely Parra. You see depressed ownership on Rockies, right? I mean, they get ownership regardless. But when the Rockies are facing a righty, you see some depressed ownership on guys like, you know, LeMahieu and Arenado, you know, Trevor Story. I mean, it's really hard for me to roster Trevor Story against a righty, but he can, you know, he has enough power where he can get into it. I feel like going against a righty, I would probably, you know, side with the big bats on the Rockies, just because they're probably going to be a little less owned.
Yeah, Rocky's road stack is one of my favorite contrarian plays. Mm-hmm. But all right, next game, we got the Blue Jays taking on the Indians, 8.5 over under. Marcus Stroman for the Jays, Mike Clevinger for the Indians. We got a Jekyll Hyde out of Stroman this year, one pretty good start, and then the next start, he lost his control. Not really interested in him against the Indians. Clevinger, he's okay for me on FanDuel, because like we said, they don't take into account walks. He usually has some issues with that, but he's got good strikeout numbers typically. So, especially with, you know, the Jays having some lineup issues, they've got some people dinged up. Any of the Indians bats you're keen on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some guys that you can get for good value, high skill guys for good value. You know, Kipnis probably going to be batting out of the two hole, only at 2,900 on FD, and don't have his DraftKings 38. Oh, so he's way more expensive on DraftKings. Was that a dog shaking?
Yeah.
You get the dog shaking with you and the dog shaking with Sean. so we're not missing anything on Friday Night Pod.
Yeah,
no, but I don't know. What do you make of that? That's a pretty significant difference, 2,900 to 3,800 for Kipnis.
Yeah, that's interesting. Part of it is probably that he's kind of been slumping to start the year. He was okay today, so I'm interested in him as a lefty against Stroman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on DK, on both sites, I like Granderson. Probably.
Yeah, he's been a staple in my lineups.
Yeah, so I like him. And then probably going to get some shares of Yonder Alonso and Michael Brantley too. I like those mm-hmm. lefty bats kind of batting in like the lower middle half of the lineup. I'm assuming like they'll be batting somewhere 4, 5, 6.
Right. So. Yeah. And the Indians kind of struggled for a little bit in the last week or two, but it was so cold out there in Cleveland. It just was depressing the hitting. So as it's warming up here, that could be a nice spot to take advantage of.
Yeah, man, right on.
All right, then we get the Orioles taking on the Red Sox in Boston. 9.5 over under, one of the higher ones of the day. Chris Tillman taking on Eduardo Rodriguez, left-hander. Rodriguez looked pretty sharp in his start coming back from some knee surgery. I don't hate him against the Orioles. It bothers me that he's a left-hander, but I do like his strikeout potential against the Orioles, which is a lineup that is just full of strikeouts right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess people might talk about some sort of revenge narrative. I think that's done. He's faced them enough now where that the whole like revenge narrative is over and done with. So I don't really take that into
the Red Sox have new beefs to settle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a nice little kerfuffle with the Yanks. But a new beef with the Yankees. But
my Twitter quote was, as someone who dislikes both teams equally, I have to say Joe Kelly was in the wrong.
Yes, I saw you post it. That's good.
You don't get to throw at somebody twice.
No, you don't. And Joe Kelly throwing like 120,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's going to take him a couple times to get him though. But maybe some one-offs with the Orioles, like Valencia or Machado.
Machado's a decent play there. He's the only Oriole I've been that interested in.
Yeah, but I'm loving the Red Sox against Tillman. I mean, Tillman sucks.
He's not good.
He's not good.
Hashtag
not good. You know, he's a fine real life pitcher, like bottom of the rotation, just like a solid veteran that can, you know, once in a while, like go deep into games and most of the time give you 5, 6 solid innings, you know, 3, 4, 5 earned runs. Like as long as the bats are there, like over the long haul, he's going to be like a guy that you're like, all right, fine, whatever. But for DFS purposes, stack him up.
Yep. And Mookie Betts and JD Martinez are both heating up. So, those are two guys I'm very interested in stacking. JD's price is really good on FanDuel right now because of his little slump there to start the year.
Yeah, and one guy that I was nice, like really nice surprised that he wasn't in the lineup tonight going against Sonny Gray was Mitch Moreland. We were talking about StatCast. Yeah, we were talking about StatCast data, and his average exit velocity off of Sonny Gray was like 108 miles an hour or something crazy like that. So he should be in the lineup.
I'm assuming he got in there though with Hanley getting hit in the wrist.
I haven't even looked into anything tonight. I don't even know what's going on with my lineups right now.
Yeah, I just got an alert that he left the game. So
oh man.
All right. Moving on, we got the Brewers taking on the Mets in New York, 8.5 over under. Zach Davies taking on Steven Matz, left-hander. Not really interested in Davies against this Mets lineup. The Mets have had a better approach this year, in my opinion. They're not quite as power crazy. Conforto at the top, there's a nice table setter if he leads off. Yeah, the Brewers are a team we love to target left-handers with. Mats has been sharp so far. So I don't know. That's a tough one for me to make my mind up on. You have any feeling on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to not hold 2017 against Mats. He scuffled a lot last year. We were stacking him up against him more often than not last year because it was just, you know, he got injured and it was an off year for him, you know, coming back from injury. Yeah, and he's a young guy. But in 2016, I mean, he really came on the scene and was a stud. And I like to think that, you know, when a pitcher or a hitter shows a skill, you know, shows they can do something, they own it, especially when they're young.
It doesn't go away.
You know, if Steven Matz shows in 2016 that he can be an above average left-handed strikeout pitcher with good command, you know, then 2017, let's just like kind of, you know, put it on the shelf and just give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think that he is doing just that. Like he's regressing back to what he really is, which is, you know, an up and coming above average young pitcher. And going against his Brewers lineup that loves to strike out, I think that he's a really sneaky play.
Yeah, I think we give the Brewers too much credit for being a good offense. Like on certain nights, they're a good offense, but it's not consistent. They're very aggressive, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of caught stealing because they run on the base paths. So that's always a pitcher's best friend. But you know, there's plenty of righties in there if you're looking to go the Brewers stack route.
But if you're going Mets, one guy that I am really interested in is Jay Bruce. I feel like he's one of those guys that he gets on these like mini tears. Well, he'll hit like five homers in a week, and he's really swinging the bat well. I was looking at it earlier. I'm not going to sit here and like pull it up now, but his exit velocity is looking good. You know, his hard hit rate's looking good. I mean, he's
been
proven track record, and Davies, you know, is definitely not a formidable opponent.
Pitch to contact is a good spot to target against an offense like that, which brings us into our next game. One I'm pretty excited to roster some of my Phillies in. You get the Phillies taking on the Rays down in Tampa, Vincent Velasquez for the Fightins, Jacob Feria for the Rays. Faria is, he pitches in the zone. His zone percentage is huge, and he got away with it last year because people hadn't seen him before, and started to catch up with him towards the end of the season. This year he's just getting shelled. So the Phillies, they've been aggressive. They're striking out a lot, but I don't think Faria is a big strikeout pitcher right now with the troubles he's having. So I'm interested in a Philly stack tomorrow. Is that just me being a homer?
No, man, absolutely not. Like I've been jamming in the Phillies, you know, for the last like week or so. They are an exciting offense. They got some good pieces. Really excited about, obviously about Rhys Hopkins. I mean, everybody, you know, if you're not hip to Rhys Hopkins, I mean, obviously if you're listening to a DFS podcast, you are, but you know, the public is the lay baseball fan is going to know who he is by the All-Star break.
He's crushing it right now. Yeah. And Scott Kingery, man, he's getting plenty of play too. And he's been pretty cheap.
I love Scott Kingery. He's on my season long team. I was I was lucky to get him late in the draft. Loving Kingery, but Cesar Hernandez, man, he's like my favorite.
Yeah, he's been great so far. I got him in a dynasty startup, so I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, like having Carlos Santana kind of just sitting there in the middle of all those guys. Yep. gives the Phillies such a if he's like a security blanket for them.
Yeah, he does a little bit of everything. Yeah, don't forget about him in Stacks. Like, he'll hit a homer here and there. He'll even steal a base a little more than you'd expect. But good OBP, so he's a nice floor. As far as Velasquez, he's another guy who we've had one really bad start and one really good start out of. I'm not sure against the Rays lineup that tends to have more of a contact approach. I'm not sure he's going to have a very good result.
Yeah, I'd rather use him on DK.
Right.
Because, you know, if the Rays are inept, you know, the batted ball luck doesn't go their way, because they're really not going to drive the ball to the ballpark more often than not. And Velasquez, you know, has really good stuff. He's still trying to, hone it. But, you know, I think one of these years he's going to, you know, find himself into a 200 strikeout year. Don't know if it's now, but he's got awesome stuff.
And if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, if he can stay healthy, right. But if he's on, like, he can dominate this Rays lineup. And he's probably, I don't know what his home away splits are, but, you know, pitching in the Trop is awesome.
Yep. All right, then we got the Pirates taking on the Marlins in Miami. 8.5 over under. Chad Kuhl taking
the
on
game of the night. The game of the night.
Peters left-hander. Peters was a dumpster fire last time out, so there's plenty of bats to target him with in the Pirates that are going to be affordable.
They are. They are, absolutely.
Starling Marte, good bet for a home run or a stolen base. Josh Bell, he's a pretty underrated player. I'd probably not go with Gregory Polanco. I think he struggles lefty to lefty. But, you know, like David Fries, he had a home run last night, and nobody had him. Except that there was somebody, I think, was it Kenny? One of the guys in the Slack chat had him with his Yankee stack.
Yeah, Kenny, like, just pulls that out of a hat, man. What the hell?
There you go.
No, yeah, I love the Pirates against lefties because you don't have it. Like, when the Pirates, like, certain teams, when they face lefties, it's super fun because then you get to go for their cheap bottom of the lineup guys. And Breeze smashes lefties. Jordy Mercer smashes lefties. Cervelli smashes lefties. So you have a lot of options there, and they typically like bat in succession. And stacks in succession are like the way to go. I thought that I had a Brave stack in succession yesterday, and I was waiting for for Kurt Suzuki to hit his third homer of the game, and he had an infield flyout.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah, man. But then Peter Borges saved the day and knocked in my Freddie Freeman and Ozzie Albies. But yeah, if you want to go in a 4-5-6-7, you know, maybe Colin Moran. He's been hitting pretty well. That's not a bad call.
And then on the Marlins, Chad Kuhl is a, you know, he's like the Pirates' favorite kind of pitcher. He just pitches to contact, lets the defense do the rest. In this ballpark, he could be effective with that. I don't think he gets you the strikeouts you need to roster him. But I don't know if I would target him as heavily as some people might think at first glance. Mm-hmm. Justin Bour, maybe the exception there. He's always a threat to double dong.
Absolutely. Yeah, we liked targeting Chad Kuhl in certain spots last year, especially with lefties. He's got really pronounced lefty-righty splits. So I could see, I could see Bohr going yard. I could also see Derek Dietrich, who's been batting out of the leadoff spot, get on base a couple times.
Yeah, he's a nice
Yeah, he's got play. Really good power. Unfortunately, he's an outfielder now, but I loved last year when he was a second baseman.
Yeah. All right, then we got the Yankees taking on the Tigers. I don't have an over-under on this game yet. Jordan Montgomery, left-hander, taking on Mike Fiers of the Tigers. Mike Fiers, he was the Phoenix last time out, back from the ashes on a new team, and was dominant. You know, I don't think that's going to deter me from probably rostering some Yankees, especially at the top. As far as Montgomery goes, my concern with Montgomery is always that he has a short leash. So if you need the win, it's a little less likely with him. But the Tigers lineup right now is not that good. It's not the weather's just, you know, normal, so nothing special there. So as far as bats go, probably looking at the Yankees. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jordan Montgomery is definitely a risky play, like you said. I mean, he could rack up some strikeouts and, you know, get you some value there, but it's not that likely that he's going to go deep into the game. And Fiers last year was a home run machine. He gave up 1.8 home runs per nine innings last year.
Yep. But he did have that one stretch where he was the Phoenix.
But this Yankees lineup, I don't know if you guys know this, but they can hit home runs. They got a couple guys can hit home runs. But, man, like, the most prodigious power hitter this year for them is, like, Didi Gregorius.
Yeah, his stats are insane right now.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I just, like, think of him when he was, like, the little yeah. Platoon shortstop on the D-backs and goes over to the Yankees, and Derek Jeter,
they
like
gave him away.
Yeah, they did. I'm definitely into a Yankees stack though with the big boys in a couple spots.
Yeah. All right, then the next game, the White Sox taking on the Twins in Minnesota. Ronaldo Lopez taking on Phil Hughes. Don't have a number on this game either. Phil Hughes last year was a pretty good guy to target. Lopez, he's been better this year. He's added some velocity, but he's still a vulnerable pitcher. The Twins have a pretty powerful lineup with Dozier at the top. Miguel Sano has been hitting home runs so far this year. And then there's some sneaky guys on that team like Eddie Rosario or Eduardo Escobar who bring a little bit of pop to the table too.
Yeah. I like the Twins in this one. They're definitely a high power offense this year. They got a lot of guys that are still not household names that can crush it. Rosario, I mean, super unheralded player, definitely is going to make a name for himself this year, and he bats out of a really prime spot. Typically he's in like the four hole. So I love him and, Max Kepler, you know, Lomo, even like Robbie Grossman, who's like Min Sal on FanDuel. I mean, you know, if he's in there, I mean, he's run into some stretches where, he's done well, but we typically use him against lefties. There's a bunch of, interesting pieces on the Twins. That you don't necessarily have to go with Dozier or Sano. Doesn't hurt, you know.
Especially if you go Buxton. He's always a threat to steal a base with his speed, so you can get the end of that lineup.
Yeah, for sure. And then on the White Sox side, obviously Jose Abreu's been hitting the ball hard. I don't even know who the hell is pitching for Minnesota.
Phil Hughes. That's who they have projected, at least.
So, I mean, Phil Hughes, like, come on.
High fastballs that aren't that fast
and
anymore.
He does not want to walk anybody. Like, this is a guy that does not want to walk people. He's going to pitch to contact. And those are risky. Those are risky spots. You know, the same thing goes with Andrew Cashner. I mean, we just talked about Andrew Cashner, but Andrew Cashner is a guy that, and Phil Hughes is a guy, James Shields, Jordan Zimmerman, like all these guys that have these like high xFIPs. They're perceived as these terrible pitchers, and they're not that good, but they find their ways into quality starts oftentimes. So stacking might not be the way to go against those guys. Really like smart, sharp one-offs or like two-man stacks. So if you're going to use...
Right, like Avisail Garcia or Jose Abreu.
Right, yep. Matt Davidson. So if you're going to use these guys on the White Sox, like definitely try to target power guys because odds are they're not going to be able to sustain a ton of production against Hughes because he's just not going to put guys on base via the walk. But he can get hit around for sure.
Right. Yeah, Tim Anderson's a pretty aggressive guy in that lineup that could be interesting. He's got speed as well.
And a shortstop position doesn't hurt, too.
All right. Yeah, it's always tough to fill. Moving on, we got the Texas series, the rematch. The Rangers taking on the Astros. Cole Hamels towing the rubber for the Rangers. Left-hander Garrett Cole for the Astros. The Astros beat up on Cole Hamels pretty good last time around a couple weeks ago. That probably happens again in this one. Garrett Cole looking pretty good as an Astro, using that slider more. Some good results to show for it. He's in a pretty good spot, especially with the Rangers having the injuries that they've been bitten by. That lineup is in flux. That always kind of throws things into a bit of a ringer. You know, as guys are moving into different spots. So I like Cole as a pitcher. He's going to be popular. And then the Astros stack is obviously going to be popular.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, Cole, I mean, it's really going to be hard for me not to jam him in a ton of lineups for this slate just because, you know, like you said, Texas, they're kind of in a little disarray right now. You know, a few of their younger pieces are kind of like negatively regressing. You know, Rougned Odor is really not the threat that we, I guess, thought he would be a couple years ago.
Is he hurt? Yeah, he's hurt. And the shortstop.
Oh, yeah, that explains why Profar is getting starts.
Yeah, so Profar's in there. So they're missing pieces for sure.
Yeah. So So I guess they're gonna have to rely on like Nomar Mazara and you know Gallo and an aging Beltre, Bobby Chirios. I mean, they got some guys. Like the Rangers are weird, man. Because like,
they're a good one-off team. Like
they are.
Yeah, Joey Gallo in a good spot here and there. Sinsu Chu is always a threat to get on base.
Yeah. I mean, Chirinos, you know, he can mash the ball as well. But yeah, like...
Hold to start the year.
Yeah, definitely. But this is a team that facing Garrett Cole, you know, in his home ballpark, I mean, he could just, you know, make mincemeat out of them. They could get to him and anything is possible. Anything is possible. But I think the odds are in favor of Cole, you know, having a monster game.
Yep. All right, moving on. The Angels taking on the Royals in KC. Andrew Haney, left-hander for the A's. Jason Hamill for the Royals. Haney, I've got a little bit of GPP interest in if you're on a two-pitcher slate. There's only one righty bat that really scares me at all in the Royals lineup, and that's Whit Merrifield. He's not off to the best start. So Haney, if he's actually healthy, he could give you a nice outing. The Angels offense has been pretty solid so far, a really good stack. Kinsler was back tonight. He had a pretty good night. Mike Trout is Mike Trout. Plenty of guys in that lineup. Cole Calhoun has been pretty affordable, and he's a nice left-hander when he is facing a righty.
Yeah, I also like Valbuena against righties. You know, obviously Ohtani batting at the bottom.
Yeah,
if he plays, yeah, because I think when's his next start? It's like this weekend. So, you know, the Angels, I mean, they're, as far as, you know, the last couple weeks have gone, are, you know, night and day compared to last year. You know, they added some pieces, and Cozart, Kinsler, yeah,
they're gelling
for sure. So definitely like the Angels against Hamill, who is not afraid to throw strikes, and he can definitely get beat by the long ball.
And nice weather there in KC too, a little bit warmer
absolutely
than most places. All right, then we got the Giants taking on the Padres, seeing from the California series. Ty Block, left-hander for the Giants, Tyson Ross for the Padres. You know, Ross is an interesting spot here. He's faced two pretty good offenses in the Astros, and I think it was the Angels. He didn't do that badly. I think he gave up 3 earned and 4 earned, respectively. So another guy for some GPP consideration. The Giants lineup is not in the most powerful lineup. They kind of, it's death by 1,000 cuts. They just get on base and wear you down, which is definitely a threat against a guy like Ross, who can struggle with control.
One guy that I think going against Tyson Ross that I'm really interested in is Brandon Belt. If you look at it, he's hitting it well. And if you look at just BVP, you're not going to see any home runs. 21 career plate appearances against Tyson Ross, no home runs. But if you look at the StatCast data, and this is something that I'm going to put on the I got to fine tune it a little bit, but I'm going to start putting this on the Lineup Logic worksheet that we offer to our patrons. It's comparing the average exit velocity against a starting pitcher compared to their like average exit velocity in general. So Brandon Belt's average exit velocity in 2017 was 88 miles an hour, which is fine. But his average exit velocity against Tyson Ross in those 21 plate appearances is 96 miles an hour. So that's a pretty significant 8-mile-an-hour difference. So I'm thinking that.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting that you say there's no home runs there, because a lot of those games probably took place at AT&T Park in San Francisco, which is the worst hitter's park. It's built to depress left-handed power, and he's a lefty.
So maybe something goes down and, San Diego and some of those batted balls that are, you know, coming off the bat at almost 100 miles an hour against Tyson Ross leave the park. I know that in San Diego it plays better to right-handers, but
you know, it's played more neutral in the last year or two. I don't know if there's like a wind shift or they built something or changed something, but it's not quite the pitcher haven it used to be.
Interesting. Yeah, so, you know, the Giants are like one of those teams that, you know, I don't want to say they're like a late hammer, but like nobody ever uses them. Yeah. So we talked about qualifiers at the top of the show. That's a team where like Tyson Ross, like, you know, he's like a Jekyll and Hyde guy. Like he's got it in him to throw a really good game, but he can get mashed up pretty good. Yep. And these Giants, you know, they can string them together. And if you do a full 4-man stack, I think you could do 5 on DK, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Belt and Crawford and Posey and McCutcheon, just line them all up there and nobody will use them. But don't quote me on that if they end up scoring one run. Right.
And then for the Padres, you got Franchy Cordero getting the call up. He's leading off. He's an interesting guy, and he's a left-hander, so I don't know what they're going to do against Ty Block there with a left-hander. He may not lead off again. Hunter Renfroe, a guy who's usually pretty affordable and should crush a left-hander. Austin Hedges, if you need a catcher, really good against left-hander. A lot of power for a catcher.
What about the triple donger, Villanueva?
If he gets a start, yeah, I would roster him against Block, who doesn't strike people out very much.
Yeah, Perella, I guess.
Hosmer's not awful against lefties either, so he's a guy you can mix in there.
Yeah, yeah, you know, he always, you know, has shown that he's fine against same-handed pitchers. You know, the lefty-righty splits aren't that pronounced for him because he doesn't try to hit for power. So he's got a high WOBA for like both lefties and righties. But the thing with Hosmer, you know, and the Padres in general and the Giants in general, you know, and other light hitting teams, Tampa Bay, et cetera, is that like, if you're going to use them, you got to full stack it with the assumption that, you know, on the off chance that they go ham, they're going to do it by stringing it together and not by going Yankees style and hitting like three homers or whatever.
Right. All right, next one here. We got the Athletics taking on the Mariners. Andrew Triggs for Oakland. Mike Leake for the Mariners. There is a little weather concern in this one. See that as it develops. I'm not all that interested in either pitcher. So that, you know, a delay threat doesn't affect things too much for me here. Really just looking at hitters. The Mariners, at least my gut feeling is they're usually better at home. So some of their big lefties like Cano, Seager, Haniger's been off to a pretty good start this year, though not as much this week. D. Gordon at the top there, you know, he hasn't ran as much as we'd hope so far this year, but that could change any day now. And then the A's have been killing me this year. I'm just picking them in all the wrong spots. What do you think on the A's?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say you've been picking them in the wrong spots because last night I was sitting on the sofa and I was bored and it was like, you know, 9:30 Eastern time here in Maryland and the A's-Dodgers game was approaching and I was like, on FanDuel, why don't I play one of those single game contests? You know, and I said, okay, everybody used Alex Wood last night. Everybody's going to be biased against the A's. Why don't I stack up the A's? And I'm sitting there playing around and I'm making my lineup and then I submit it and then I like don't really think. And then I look after the game starts. I'm like, shit, I meant to stack the A's. Like, and I, to be a bit Mr. Contrarian, and I ended up stacking the Dodgers and the A's went off and Chris Davis started the whole damn thing with the two run oppo dong off of Alex Wood. The A's have some serious power. They got some nice hitters in Olson and Chapman and Davis. Yeah. You know, they got some contact hitters, you know, Jed Lowry.
Yeah, they remind me a lot of the Brewers, like we were talking about earlier. Like they've got a good power rep, but they're cold so many nights. But when they go off, they go off. Yeah, I stacked them against Hyunjin Ryu two nights ago, expecting the result from last night that they got against Alex Wood, who's a much better pitcher than Ryu. And you know, that's baseball for you.
Yeah, maybe that's a lesson in general with baseball. It's like, sometimes if you want to win, sometimes you have to, you know, forget about the fact that there's a good pitcher on the mound and stack against him, you know, because Alex Wood's a good pitcher, but he's no, you know, he's no, no Syndergaard or Kershaw or, you know, whatever. Yep. So it doesn't hurt to go a little contrarian. And that would have been the play last night.
Right. All right, then the D-backs taking on the Dodgers. Zach Greinke on the hill for Arizona. Over under a 7 in this one. Kenta Maeda for the Dodgers. Really low total on this guy. I guess it's the two pitchers that are doing pretty well right now, influencing that. Neither offense has been great to date. You know, I keep throwing a Dodger stack out there, hoping it's going to be the night that they go off. Really hasn't happened as of yet, but the top of that lineup it's good. It's going to happen. Chris Taylor, Corey Seager. Corey Seager's been pretty cheap on certain sites. Puig just got a day off. Maybe he'll be a little refreshed. Bellinger, when he gets it right, is going to be good. And then Yasmani Grandal is the only guy on their team that's really playing well so far. If you need a catcher, he's an interesting option against a pitcher that's going to be pretty owned in Greinke. You know, like we just talked about, if you stack Dodgers against Greinke, it's going to be very low owned. It's risky, but sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah, I mean, and you said it, like this Dodgers team and really both these teams are, you know, definitely hitting below their potential. So I think that, you know, we just got to like really pay attention to the batted ball data, you know, see which guys are getting unlucky and try to get in before, you know, before the other shoe drops, because there's so much talent on both these teams. It's bound to happen here pretty soon. And just speaking before about the exit velocity differences, Corey Seager, awesome exit velocity against Zach Greinke. 16 plate appearances, 7 batted ball events, or 8 batted ball events. So he's put the ball in play on half of his plate appearances. 99.5 mile per hour exit velocity compared to 89.7 mile per hour average exit velocity. So this might be the game where Seager gets it going, and he's going to be like 2% owned against Greinke.
Right. Yeah, that's that whole lineup is going to be low owned. And then the Diamondbacks, Goldie's finally got it going a little bit here this week. He's hit a couple bombs. Coming off relievers, you know, so take that with a grain of salt, I guess. Losing Jake Lamb in that lineup kind of threw things into flux. They got Pollock instead of leading off. Now he's hitting cleanup some nights. You know, they lost a power bat. They got Daniel Descalso in there a lot of nights, or Chris Owings. Kenta Maeda likes pitching at home at Dodger Stadium. He's pretty good there most nights. The only concern with Maeda is that he's another guy who doesn't get a lot of leash. It's hard for him to go more than 5-6 innings before they start calling in the pen.
Yeah, that's definitely a risky play. But yeah, no, with no Jake Lamb there, that's like a huge weight lifted off Maeda's shoulders, having that devastating lefty bat in there. But yeah, you know, that's the biggest risk you run with Maeda, is he can get you 8 strikeouts in 5 innings, but can he get over 5 innings, 6 innings? That's the question. Right.
Yeah. And then on the other side, Greinke, you know, he'll probably be the second most popular pitcher after Cole. You know, I'm not sure how I feel on him yet. I'm going to have to look into it a little deeper.
Well, the hottest hitter.
My initial thought is kind of...
Go, finish your initial thought. Sorry.
My initial thought is that on the road here, I may fade Greinke just to be a little different.
Yeah, you know, I think that Greinke might be a good fade. I agree. Because I'm looking here at, like, StatCast data. And I sorted this here by strikeouts. And the leader in strikeout rate against Greinke is Grandal. He struck out the most of all Dodgers against Greinke, 7 strikeouts and just 26 plate appearances. But he has hit 2 homers and a double and has a 91 mile per hour exit velocity. So I think the thing with Grandal is he is trying to hit the ball very hard against Greinke. And yes, he's striking out at a decent clip, like 25%, probably more than that. Yeah, like 29, 30%. But, you know, he's striking out a lot, but he's hitting it really hard when he gets in contact with it. So he's their hottest hitter, and he has the biggest strikeout problem. Everybody else is managing to put the ball in play. They could rack up some production against him, and, you know, it could be a really hard it could be a really hard to fade him, but if you do, it might pay off.
Right. So that's the slate. Some interesting stacks in there. Definitely pay attention through the day tomorrow. You know, add us on Twitter and Slack chat. Well, hit us with your Twitter, Josh.
Yeah, it's at Josh Fern, at JOSHFERN. I'm, you know, trying to respond to everything and anything that people message me, DM me, try to be as active as possible. So by all means, if you have any questions, don't be shy. I love to talk baseball, give some advice, give some takes. So hit me up.
All right. Thanks for being on with me tonight, Fern. Some good stuff. And
yeah, Mike, that's always a pleasure, man. I'll talk with you in the old Slack, and all of you out there, if you want to get in on our Slack chat, you know, going all day, sharing advice, sharing takes, sharing perspectives, you know, join us. Check out patreon.com/lineuplogic. It'd be awesome for you to join us. We'd be honored.
Great place to be. All right. Good luck tomorrow.
All right, fellas. Take care. Thanks for listening.